Good day, companions and brethren, and welcome to this edition of our Royal Archmasons of Maryland series of interviews. Today, we welcome Most Excellent Grand High Priest Stephen Tyner from the General Grand Chapter International. You know, many of us basically know the members of the General Grand Chapter by name only, so let's say how pleased I am that you have taken the time to be with us today and share some of the light that we all seek to get. Tell us a little bit about the Grand Chapter and those who run it and the scope of the work that you do on behalf of York Rite Masonry.
Well, General Grand Chapter has three primary officers, the General Grand High Priest, General Grand King, and General Grand Scribe. And we also have, of course, our General Grand Secretary, who we're very grateful for. And we have our deputies and ambassadors around the world who help to represent us. And our purpose, our aim, and our goal is to propagate and promote Royal Archmasonry all over the world. It's one of the great joys of being a part of an international organization is that we have opportunity to promote the American rite of the Royal Arch everywhere around the globe.
How long have you been in Masonry?
This year will be 25 years.
What other positions have you had, or has it all been pretty much, you know, Blue Lodge, whatever you did there, and then York Rite?
I have served, lost count of how many times, as Grand Chaplain and Grand Porter for our Grand Lodge, and I served as the Chief ADEP for the Society of Rosicrucians here in Arkansas.
What got you interested in the fraternity, and what led you to the York Rite?
You know, Bob, I was about 10 years old. I was in the car with my mother, and we were going through a bank drive-through, and for the first time that I remembered, I noticed the strange building next door that had no windows. And I asked my mother about this place. My family is not Masonic, but she had a favorable opinion of the Masonic Lodge, and she told me that they were a club of men who did good deeds, and that she had a high opinion of all the Masons who were in that town. I've often said I really believe that that is when the great architect of the universe put it in my heart to be a Mason. I wouldn't learn until later within the boundaries of a lodge that I was made a Mason first at heart. But I believe that all began as just a little boy. From that time forward, I had a desire. I had church leaders that I knew who were Masons and thought well of them. And so when I was in college in Conway, Arkansas, I turned 21. I didn't know any Mason in Conway, so I began to ask all over town if anyone knew a Mason, and I found one and got to know him, obtained a petition, and joined the lodge. And that night, I received my entered apprentice degree. It was my first time to ever be inside of a Masonic building. I was not DeMolay, no Masonic family, so this was all brand new to me. And the layout of the lodge, the language of the ritual, I fell in love with everything that night and knew I had found a home. The man who lectured me was not in favor of appendant bodies, and so he encouraged me not to go anywhere other than the Blue Lodge.
Oh.
But I was really hungry for light, and so I eventually found someone who gave me a petition to the Scottish Rite. And interestingly enough, it was in a Scottish Rite reunion that between degrees I would pound the class directors with questions, and most of them they were not able to answer. So they went and found one particular gentleman who told me he could answer my questions. And after asking a few questions, he said, "Young man, you should be a member of the York Rite." Well, I was not aware a York Rite even existed.
He sure
went and found a petition. So I literally filled out a petition for a Royal Arch chapter at a Scottish Rite reunion where I was receiving the degrees. And that brought me into the York Rite.
Well, it's a couple of things that you mentioned in there, and that was the building next door to where you were going to the bank. But for those who may not know, you are a minister, and how has it helped you as a Mason, and how has Masonry helped you in your ministry?
That's a great question, Bob. And, you know, for me, my Masonry and ministry are almost a complete blend. It's difficult to distinguish or separate the two. I knew at a very young age I wanted to be a Mason, and I knew at a very young age that I wanted to be a minister. I began pastoring my first church at the age of 16. And so far, every church I've pastored has had Masons who were members. The church I currently pastor has a nickname in our city as the Masonic Baptist Church because there are so many Masons that are here. And of course, the Masons and the membership have been so helpful because when you move to a new city, to a new church, you are immediately endeared to the hearts of those who are Masons. And so they have introduced me in the community. And then on the other hand, it's caused my congregation to be much larger. When you're a minister in Masonry, Masons come to you because they know they can trust you. And so there's a real blend between the two. It's hard to separate them.
You are a Baptist minister, right?
I am. Yes.
I'm not going to go anywhere against that. But, you know, you are from the South. And having lived there a little bit myself, you get a little fire and brimstone going?
Once in a while. But I tell you, I have some good Episcopalian friends who tell me I'm a closeted Episcopalian. So.
That's good. I like that. Well, okay, so as we get into some other stuff here, has the General Grand Chapter given any thought to a membership management system, which apparently the Grand Encampment does something similar?
No, we really haven't. There are some Grand Chapters who have set up their members on the Grand Encampment database. There's a cost for that, of course, but we really haven't seen a reason to duplicate the Grand Encampment database, though it is very helpful.
What about the last triennial, the Grand General Grand District deputies, who happened to be Mark Irwin at the time and J.B. Walsh, were tasked with forming a Mid-Atlantic region. Now, since the Northeast region, is so large, is this an initiative that may be pursued?
No, we really are not currently pursuing that in this triennium. And to be completely honest, I never really knew much about that. I think that was something that past General Grand High Priest Jim Hodge may have tasked them with, but didn't really make the other officers aware of that. So I didn't realize they were doing that.
Yeah. The General Grand Chapter, are they going to deal with the Northeast District? This is kind of the same question, I think, over again. I had some of the brethren send them to me. Because of its large size, like Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, they don't participate in the same world as Maryland, Delaware, and D.C. And is there any effort being made on forming a Mid-Atlantic district that shortens travel, kind of enhances mutual support?
You know, it is definitely a large area as far as travel, and it's certainly true that some jurisdictions are much smaller in number of members. This goes back quite some time when Larry Gray was General Grand High Priest. The Grand Encampment began the Mid-Atlantic really without his knowledge. And so at that time, General Grand High Priest Gray asked the various jurisdictions of the Northeast if they were interested in forming a Mid-Atlantic region. And the answer then was no. Since that time, it's a subject that's been bandied around, I guess, ever since Grand Encampment created that Mid-Atlantic region. And it's been voted on a few times, but despite the arguments to move into a Grand Encampment structure, the vote's always been to keep our current structure.
So one of the questions that I was given was to ask what the chief benefit is to belong to a global fraternity with Grand Chapters in many countries. Again, how does it benefit those of us in Maryland to support the chapter, Grand Chapter? And are there any states that are kind of out there swimming alone, if you will? Maybe Maine, New Hampshire, and Vermont are three that I've mentioned earlier.
Yes, in fact, I love that question. I love to talk about that because there's really a lot of satisfaction that comes from knowing that you're helping to spread and promote the growth of the American Rite of Royal Arch Masonry around the world. And being an international organization, we're able to do that. We negotiate with regulatory bodies. It helps enable a peaceful existence and development in the Masonic community. And that fosters Royal Arch Masonry's opportunity to grow. You know, being international, we're in harmony with the Supreme Grand Chapters of England and Scotland and Ireland. And it's much easier to do that when we're all under one umbrella known as General Grand Chapter Royal Arch Masons International. And it really puts Royal Arch Masonry on the map in a way that would be difficult to do so if we didn't have an international body. You can travel and know that you can visit a local Royal Arch body in another country and know that it's regular and that it is recognized. When it comes to the benefits of individual jurisdictions, I particularly like to talk about that because I use myself as an example. When I was high priest of my local chapter, I knew absolutely nothing about General Grand Chapter, and it's a bit more embarrassing to admit that when I entered the Grand Chapter line in Arkansas, I knew very little. And so much happens because of General Grand Chapter that I think many local Royal Arch companions are unaware of. You know, I didn't know that regional conferences happen because of General Grand Chapter. General Grand Chapter has more than a 200-year history, and most of the Grand Chapters in the world were chartered by General Grand Chapter. General Grand Chapter publishes the ritual. We do that in English, French, Spanish, Italian, German, Romanian, Croatian, Portuguese, and are ready to do that for others as they're needed. It's so helpful to be able to go in and negotiate with Grand Lodges. A wonderful example I like to use is Portugal. Portugal did not receive Royal Arch Masonry until the 1980s.
Oh, wow.
And after Masonry was established there, General Grand Chapter was able to go in and work with the Grand Master, work with the Grand Lodge officers to begin planting subordinate Royal Arch chapters, which have grown and prospered. And of course, today they have a Grand Chapter. You know, it's altogether possible that a Grand Chapter here in the U.S. could have worked with Portugal and done that. But it's unlikely, you know, and so having the international organization really helps with that. When you go to De Molay International and you walk into their hospitality room and you see that huge banner that says, you know, this hospitality room is provided for you by Royal Arch Masons around the world. And the magazine that we produce, the Bibles for the Anointed High Priest, the library of Ray Denslow that we've preserved in Atlanta, Georgia, or when you go to the George Washington Masonic National Memorial and you see the Royal Arch Room, all of this happens because of General Grand Chapter. But the number one thing I want people to know about that is it's a little asking the question what General Grand Chapter does for me, though it does do many things, is a bit like a church asking what giving money to missions does for the local church, you know, because actually all of our participation in the international organization allows the American right of Royal Arch to grow around the world. And so it's an investment worldwide.
Very good. Now, one of the things that all of us in Masonry, or at least all the ones I know, are concerned about is membership. And, I just see the York Rite sometimes struggling. We get a lot of people who petition, a lot of guys come in and petition, and then sometimes we don't see them back again. And one of the reasons that I wanted to start doing these kinds of interviews, whether it be with you or the Grand Master or whoever it may be that's the head of a body, to provide more light and try to get the interest of York Rite up. So, you're the head man. You've got the gavel and the top hat. What are your suggestions on encouraging membership?
I think the Royal Arch Chapter lost focus many years ago when it moved away from education. Charles Albert Snodgrass was a pastor and high priest in the state of Tennessee, and he wrote a book called Light from the Sanctuary of the Holy Royal Arch. And in that book, he makes the argument that the Royal Arch Chapter should be the place of Masonic education. It should be the lodge of education. And he's exactly right. We remember our most excellent master's degree obligation, and that is to spread light to those who are lesser informed. What I have found is that the chapters which are doing their very best, who are having retention of members, growing, having the highest attendance at their individual convocations has been because they are using education in a way that's drawing the companions back to the craft.
Well, and that's a good answer because I know I kind of see I see people struggling, and that's what I see. One of the other questions that I was given, what are the duties and responsibilities of the District Deputy General Grand High Priest, and how does one make the best use of these appointed chapter officers.
One of the great advantages to having our deputies is that it makes it easier for General Grand Chapter to be well represented at Royal Arch functions within a local region. Obviously, the General Grand High Priest, General Grand King, and General Grand Scribe get spread pretty thin in trying to cover all the areas. And that deputy is available, you know, for annual communications, yes, but also for special award events or degree ceremonies. And really, their most important duty is planning the annual regional conference, because this is where a good deputy will plan a great program of good speakers. I've discovered many times when I have gone to regional conferences, I may leave not knowing a lot more than I knew when I went there. But I left with a greater zeal than ever for the craft. It's an opportunity to really have a pep rally, and the deputy helps to do that.
You know, going back to what you were talking about, the education part of it, here in Maryland, the Royal Arch has a pin that is a square, and it has the year that that person was a master. And even if it's a repeat master, we present this pin to them. And I've done several of them. And one of the things that we tend to talk about is, you know, how the Blue Lodge and being raised to the sublime degree of Master Mason is not the end, that there's more to the story. And sometimes when you bring this up and tell them that the Royal Arch, for example, used to be a part of the 3 degrees of Blue Lodge Masonry and was for years and years, and people don't know this, and they don't realize, I don't think fully, that there is more education to have, and you just need to take that little step.
Yes.
What about the philanthropic things that the York Rite does?
Yes, Royal Arch Research Assistance, RARA, is our philanthropy.
Yes.
And it's really a wonderful philanthropy. You know, when you say the words central auditory processing disorder, most people will scratch their heads and they ask, what in the world is central auditory processing disorder? But CAPD, even though it's not well known, is not a small problem. There are as many as 5% of school-age children who struggle with CAPD. And the best way to describe it is that what dyslexia is to the eye, CAPD is to the ear. It's not really a hearing problem. Someone may have perfect hearing, but it's a problem deep within the brain with understanding what you hear. And it's a very underfunded area of research. And so Royal Arch Masons, by establishing RARA, are making a huge impact in an area that's greatly underfunded. Dr. Frank Musick is a joy to visit at the University of Arizona in Tucson. In his laboratory, Dr. Musick, when you come to visit, will tell you if it were not for Royal Arch Masons, this laboratory would close, because so much of their support comes from RARA. The same is true with Autism Speaks. We support Autism Speaks because approximately 85% of those who are diagnosed with autism have CAPD as well. And scientists are looking for that curious connection between autism and CAPD. So we support Autism Speaks in the specific area of CAPD research. And the same is true with Hearing Health Foundation. I'm really happy to report that in the last triennial, RARA gave $780,000 to research. $360,000 went to Hearing Health, $300,000 Autism Speaks, and $120,000 Dr. Musick at the University of Arizona. It's something I think Royal Arch Mason should truly be proud of.
And rightfully so. Well, we're kind of getting down to the end here. And, of course, this year has been like no other year in so many ways that we could talk for an hour about. But what would you like to see accomplished in your term before you leave, and if we ever get back to normalcy?
You're right. It has been a year like no other, and we all are hoping and praying that it will soon be behind us and we'll return to more of a normal existence. But, you know, during this time, it's very important to me to see some things where we've lagged behind to be improved. One of those is the Royal Arch Mason magazine. I don't know if you've received your winter edition, but it has been greatly upgraded. It is full color and slick paper, and we're very proud of it.
I'll tell you why I'm chuckling. It was a question that was submitted to me, that the question was something, and I'm kind of paraphrasing, has any consideration been given to modernizing the pamphlet? So you answered it right off there. So anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, that was right out of the gate. We wanted to have a new look to the magazine. And we've also developed a new website that is continuing to be developed. And I want to encourage every Rural Arts Mason to go to the website and to register, to log in, to create a profile. We have some big plans for the website. There'll be an online store, of course, there where you can make purchases of things that are related to rural arts. But one of the fun things is we're going to have a depository there for marks, where you can deposit your mark as a mark master. We want to promote Masonic education on the website. There are already many opportunities for education that are there, and many more are about to be unveiled. We want to promote the library that we have in Atlanta, Georgia. More, there are many Rural Arts Masons who don't even know that we have the library there, that is just a real treasure, a very valuable thing for us to have. And fraternal relations, I want to make the cooperation between the Masonic bodies sweeter than it has been in the past. In ritual, we're going to promote the ritual jewel more than ever. I think that in many ways, our ritual has not been at its best the last few years, and we want to encourage those who best can work and best agree, and for them to be acknowledged and rewarded.
Well, I agree with that, and we are going to start trying to attack that here in Maryland. But I can't thank you enough for the time that you've given us. I appreciate it very much. I wish you luck. I have to say to those who are listening, I hope that those will go to the York Rite Maryland website, and I encourage you too, sir, to go there and take a look. It's a beautiful website. It's got a lot of information on there, and hopefully we can get some petitions off of that. But again, thank you so much for your time, and I appreciate it, and good luck to you for the rest of your term.
Oh, it has been my great joy to visit with you this evening. Thank you.